Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Terry Barr, and across the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide to the Civic Media app. I am Todd Albaugh, hour number two of the Todd Albaugh Show. It is Monday, November 21st, 2022. We welcome you in. Here's a little bit of what you need to know today. Weather is going to be pretty nice across the state of Wisconsin. Sunny or partly sunny skies. Temperatures in the low to mid-30s or thereabouts, depending upon if you're up north and you're Amory or over in Wausau or down in the RC in southwest Wisconsin or wherever you're listening to. No snow or precipitation in the forecast, so that's good. Temperatures will warm up as we go through the week, at least around maybe 40-ish. They were talking maybe some precipitation around Thanksgiving-ish day. That's kind of being taken out, so we'll see where all the weather fronts go, but hopefully roads will be safe if you have to travel over the holiday or wherever you're going to be on this Thanksgiving week. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we are going to have Joe Hassler Jr. join us, a former colleague of mine at the state capitol. And we're actually not talking about, well, not about direct politics. We're going to talk World Cup and FIFA. The World Cup 2022 got underway in Qatar over the weekend. We're going to talk soccer, football, for those traditionalists out there. But we're also going to talk a little politics in terms of Qatar and just kind of the weirdness of this whole thing. We're going to get to that in a minute.
It is a bit of a mess.
An understatement, right?
Yeah, seriously.
A bit of a mess is right. Before we get to that, though, the quick what do you need to know for this hour. Again, there was a shooting over the weekend at a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, leaving at least 8 people dead and 25 injured. The gunman was subdued by guests and then arrested. The patrons at the club grabbed one of the shooter's own guns and started beating him to kind of knock him down and then subdued him. Police are saying those individuals are heroes today and probably saved countless other lives by stopping the gunman. He is in custody at this hour. Authorities are investigating whether this was a direct hate crime. And there are reports, multiple reports today, that the shooter's uncle is, or grandfather rather, is a outgoing GOP mega Republican from California, from San Diego, who compared January 6th to the Revolutionary War. So, again, you have to wonder about this whole messaging out there and the effect that it had. The Wisconsin Badger football team is bowl-bound. They beat Nebraska by 1 point over the weekend in a fourth-quarter come-from-behind victory. They are now going to Axe Week, trying to get back Paul Bunyan's axe from the PJ Flexters in Minnesota. The Flexters travel to Madison on Saturday for a 2:30 kickoff at Camp Randall Stadium. I want to put a button on the subject from last hour, the shooting in Colorado Springs. We had former U.S. Congressman Steve Gunderson from the 3rd Congressional District on. We really appreciate him taking the time and being with us today and giving us his perspective. I just want to put a button on the fact that the takeaway from Steve is having a calm dialogue. And that's why I told Aaron over the break. One of the reasons I've always admired Steve is his ability to truly listen to both sides, even when he doesn't understand them. And I'm not big into astrology, but my sign is Libra. So, you know, I'm pretty good at looking at both sides and kind of weighing out both sides as a trait that I have. But I'm nowhere near what Steve is. And, you know, he was outed on the House floor in 1994 and had despicable things being said about him, but was able to keep his cool and make these very lucid points to win the argument. And I know that I'm a fairly passionate person. And when I hear an injustice, when I hear people being picked on, it really riles me up. But to Steve's point, the more we can stay calm and talk about these things in a meaningful way, the more progress we're going to make. And the more that we can talk about the fact that, yes, much of this hate speech is coming from far-right Republican and conservative organizations, far-right churches. To Steve's point, his church in Florida, elected him president of their church council as an openly gay man. There are other churches in Wisconsin that I know support equal rights for gay people. And it's not just Christian. There are you know, Jewish synagogues. There are Mormons. If you go right down the list, there are certainly people without faith. And we have to recognize that too. People who are atheists and don't bring faith to the table. And the more we can listen to each other and realize and not say that every Christian organization is this way or every Republican is this way, the more we can get closer to an understanding and a place of betterment for our communities and our society. And we had Mayor Mike on from Wausau last week talking about how they put pride flags painted on the crosswalk, and they also have veterans memorials. And the community comes out for both and supports both. So it's about respect, it's about understanding, and it's about calling out hate when we hear it, like some of those despicable comments that we heard last hour that we will not repeat, and we will move on. We are going to take a break. The thing is to respect one another, and we will give you the Trevor Project number. If you're someone who is struggling or know someone who is and needs some help, we will get you that number to call the Trevor Project. It does get better, and I am proof of that, and you can get in a good place and be a happy person, and that's always good. We're going to talk some happy news, soccer, and some weird news, World Cup, when we come back. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And we are back on the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, hour number two. We welcome you in. Thanks for joining us. If you are someone who is struggling, who wants to talk with someone about your sexual identity, whether you know someone who you love who may be struggling and want to know ways that you can help them, organization called The Trevor Project. You can reach them by going to thetrevorproject.org. That's the TREVOR, trevorproject.org. Or just give them a call on the toll-free number. It is 1-866-488-7386. Again, toll-free, The Trevor Project at 866-488-7386, and Aaron is going to put that on our website and social as well to get some help. The wonderful people, you can call them, you can text them, you can just chat on the line, whatever you are comfortable doing.
Yeah, the text number is 678-678, so pretty easy to remember.
678-678. That's great, Aaron. Thank you again. Texting Trevor Project, 678-678. We are going to change gears a little bit. And we're going to talk about another big thing in the news today, which is the World Cup. And growing up in Western Wisconsin in the 80s, soccer was not a big deal. You know, it was kind of made fun of in some ways. I may or may not have participated in those making fun of the sport, because we didn't have soccer in Richland Center until I was like a senior in high school. And it was just kind of like an afterthought. And now, of course, in many communities, the soccer game for homecoming is probably a bigger deal than the American football game. Of course, soccer, as it's been called, the most beautiful sport. So the worldwide sport that almost every country plays, unlike baseball or American football, because you say the World Series, you know, the Super Bowl, world champions. Well, yeah, it's the United States, maybe Canada and whatever playing it. But soccer... Soccer is truly a world sport. So when you talk about the World Cup, you are involving everyone. This year, the World Cup that got underway over the weekend, and the United States plays Wales at 1 o'clock this afternoon. This year, the World Cup is in Qatar, in the Middle East, a very hot area. Normally, the World Cup is played in the summer. This year, it's being played in the winter. There is a great article in The Atlantic that came out over the weekend by Tom McTeague entitled, "The Qatar World Cup Exposes Soccer's Shame. The absurd spectacle of a tiny Gulf country hosting the world's premier tournament reveals the ugly side of, quote, the beautiful game." I'm going to read you a little bit of this. And coming up here at the bottom of the hour, we are going to have Joe Hassler Jr., a friend of mine, a former colleague, one of the most avid soccer fans that I know, and a graduate of UW Journalism School here in Madison. So a great investigative reporter, knows his stuff. And he's going to come on just as a common dude who loves the sport. And he's going to, because I'll admit, I appreciate soccer. I'll watch a game. I look at soccer for me as kind of like the NHL. I don't really pay attention in the regular season, but when the Stanley Cup playoffs start, I'll peer in. I'll watch some good hockey. Unlike friends that I have who will sit down and watch an entire game with teams that they know or care little about just because they love the sport, I'm not that person. But Joe Hassler Jr., my friend, he is a soccer fanatic, a soccer nut. So he'll come in and give us an educated perspective on the World Cup here at the bottom of the hour. So this is the setup. Okay, you understand? You have to kind of know the backstory before we start having a discussion about this. And if you want to call in, by the way, you can weigh in on what we were talking about last hour with the shooting in Colorado. You can talk about World Cup if you'd like or anything that's on your mind. Give us a call toll-free at 715-388-7155. Again, our toll-free number to call in and talk is 715-388-7155. So this article in The Atlantic over the weekend, Qatar hosting the Soccer World Cup is like Donald Trump becoming president of the United States. It should not have happened, but the very fact that it has only exposes how bad things have become. I think that's a great opening sentence, by the way. It puts it all in perspective, right, Aaron?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good It's basically the same situation. Right. People are like, there's no way Donald Trump's going to get elected president. He's an idiot.
Right. There's no way they're going to have a World Cup of the desert. It'll never happen. But yet, here we are. The article continues. Once this famous old tournament kicks off in Doha, which it has now, the fact that it did can never be unwound. Qatar will forever have been the host of the 22nd FIFA World Cup, the greatest absurdity in the history of the sport. Even to recite the details of the backstory feels darkly grim. So let's go back, shall we? The article continues. In 2010, soccer's world governing body, FIFA, awarded the right to host the world's most popular and prestigious sporting event to a tiny Middle Eastern autocracy with a population of barely 3 million. Qatar has never even played in the World Cup before, let alone hosted one, and it made a singularly unsuitable venue. In summer, when the tournament has always been held, the temperatures are so hot, soccer cannot safely be played at all. To hold a 90-minute match in the desert at the height of the Arabian summer is a self-evidently ludicrous proposal. This is why, for the first time ever, the tournament is taking place in November and December, which is midway through the European soccer season. This is as preposterous as running the World Series over Christmas week. They might as well have handed Dubai the rights to the Winter Olympics. But this idiocracy glosses over the true weirdness. Qatar might now be home to about 3 million people, but the proportion of actual Qatari citizens who live there is little more than 10%. The rest comprise some very rich expatriates of other nations and a huge army of poor migrants who do most of the work. When Qatar won the tournament, it did not have the infrastructure, weather, or fan base to justify being awarded the World Cup. But it was very, very rich. So the whole saga is rather like Dave Chappelle's cynical take on Trump. Just as the former president acted as the quote-unquote honest liar who revealed something important about American politics in Chappelle's view, Qatar seems to me, says the author of this article, to have done something similar for soccer. Until now, the sports world's governing body was able to at least partially hide its sheer awfulness because everyone had a stake in the charade. If handling the tournament to Russia in 2018 might have looked bad on a democracy and human rights index, it was at least a big country with a proud soccer history. But Qatar? Not even FIFA's disgraced former boss, Sepp Blatter, now feels able to defend the decision. Quote, he called it a mistake, he recently admitted, that Qatar was able to beat rival bids from the United States, Australia, Japan, and South Korea to win the right to host the event was so indefensible, so in-your-face ridiculous, that it is impossible not to conclude that the whole system is rigged, which, in essence, it is. More than a one-off scandal, the World Cup of Qatar is a fable of the world we live in, and not just the world of soccer. Qatar 2022 is what happens when a corrupted international organization with huge power and little accountability is put in charge of things that matter. When democracies are willing to sell themselves, their institutions, and even their culture to the highest bidder, and when the whole economies become dependent on the exploitation of cheap, globalized labor and unregulated capital. Qatar is like an extra shot of vodka in this cocktail of shame, a distillation of all that is wrong, which is usually masked by other ingredients. European soccer clubs, European club soccer, that is already rife with plutonic backers from the Gulf and beyond. The article continues and goes through some of these clubs that have spent are being bought by Arab companies and Arab governments for multi-millions of dollars. The top players like Messi and Ronaldo making well over $100 million a year. One being signed for $650 million for a contract. And one of those teams is Paris Saint-Germain. They're not alone, the article says, in dependence on Gulf wealth. Just the most brazen. The English club Manchester City has been owned by an investment arm of the Abu Dhabi state since 2008. An organization that also has the largest stake in the U.S. Major League Soccer franchise, New York City FC. Another English Premier League side, Newcastle United, was bought last year by a consortium that includes the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund. With seemingly bottomless budgets enabling them to buy up all the top talent, these clubs are now, surprise, surprise, winning far more than they used to. So the article continues in The Atlantic on this, on the World Cup, says soccer is simply an extreme example of a wider phenomenon. The world of golf is currently embroiled in a civil war over a new LIV golf tour funded by the same Saudi wealth fund that now owns Newcastle United. The Formula One motorsport franchise has a long history of coziness with plutocracies and already held a Grand Prix in Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. And last year added a fourth Gulf circuit, of course, everyone understands, in Qatar. So here's the deal. Qatar and other Gulf states want to diversify their economies to survive the day the spigot and their oil gas wealth runs dry. And how does this relate to what we talked about last week when we had a former member of parliament from Denmark, Christian Jensen, on, who's now a special envoy to the United Nations from Denmark. He was at the climate change conference in Egypt last week. And remember what he told us? There were a lot of Texas petroleum companies there and executives. And you know why? Because they figured out that renewable energy, green energy, will actually make them money. And as it makes money, fossil fuels and those economies are going to dry up. So Qatar gets this. So like, how are we going to make money after this whole oil thing kind of runs dry? Article continues, they want to do so while protecting their autocratic regimes. To achieve this aim, they invest in sport, entertainment, tourism, and transport, in the hopes of becoming sunny, low-tax centers of a future global economy, where the rich come to live, work, shop, and relax away from cumbersome burdens of democracy, serviced by an army of poor immigrant workers. Their investment in sports is merely one part of the broader strategy. We just choose to look away from the grimness. The article finishes up by saying, can I really say with a straight face that I wouldn't quietly rejoice if some huge sovereign wealth fund bought the club that I enjoy watching so it can become a top level? By its very nature, the cash is corrupting. Can any of us turn off and complain that when we discover the World Cup has similarly been sold off? He says, the West is neither a rich or dominant as the world as it once was. It must make difficult choices that involves trade-offs. But if the plan was to maintain national wealth, after the past couple of decades, it's been a disaster. We'll come back and talk with Joe Hassler on this subject, the World Cup, Qatar. Stay with us. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. The Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, whether you're listening in the RC on WRCE, up in Wausau on WXCO, or over in beautiful Amory on WXCE, or maybe you're streaming us via the Civic Media app around the world, we appreciate you, and thanks for being with us. Speaking of Amory, our signal goes pretty darn close to the Twin Cities, and that is where we find my next guest, a longtime friend and former colleague of the state capitol, Joe Hassler Jr., joins us from the Twin Cities. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, Todd. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for taking the time. And before the break, we were talking about the setup, reading the part of this article in The Atlantic on the World Cup. And as I said before the break, you know, I'm not putting you off as some sort of, you know, soccer expert or professional. What this really is, it's kind of like what Joe and I used to do in the morning. We come in the office, have a cup of coffee, and discuss the day's events. And Joe has been a lifelong, is it fair to say, Joe, soccer fan, and you follow the sport, and you know it very well.
Oh, yeah. That's correct. Yeah, I would say I've been rearranging my life and work schedule around the World Cup specifically since at least 2006, but I've been watching it since at least 1994 when they came to the USA. So
that's,
yeah,
that's
pretty big fan.
That's fantastic. And I admit, I am not. I said I kind of like look at soccer the way I look at the NHL. You know, I'll watch the Stanley Cup to see who wins. I'll watch the end of the World Cup to. It's good soccer. It's interesting, but unlike you, I'm not a fan. So it's good to have someone on who is actually an expert. I want to just get your take on so before the break, I was reading part of this article, and of course my timing was a little off, and I couldn't get to the end of the money line. So I'm going to give it to you. So the first line is this of the article. Qatar hosting the Soccer World Cup is like Donald Trump becoming president of the United States. It should not have happened, but the very fact that it has only exposes how bad things have become. I thought that was a great first line. And then you jump to the end of the article, and the author ends up by saying, quoting Trump, who said, quote, "I'll tell you what," Donald Trump claimed in a Republican primary debate on the way to his party's presidential nomination in 2016, quote, "With Hillary Clinton, I said, be at my wedding. And she came to my wedding. You know why? She had no choice, because I gave," unquote. Well, Qatar, just like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Russia, and China, we have been giving to the West for years, and now we are going to the wedding. I thought that was great. I mean, what is up, Joe? Help us understand. How did Qatar, a place that has no business hosting a World Cup, is it all just corruption and money?
I mean, effectively, yes. That is at the end of the day, it is corruption and money. I think one thing that I read the article as well that you were mentioning there, and there's a great deal of coverage in this sort of vein right now that's coming out. This sort of language of it reveals or it exposes, which to me implies or suggests that this is news. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned that you only watch the hockey during the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
A lot of people only pay attention to world soccer during the World Cup.
Right.
Uh-huh. The fact of the matter is, if you watch soccer, you are well aware of the seedy underbelly of world football. You know, every weekend I tune in to watch teams like PSG, which is owned by Qatar, Manchester City, which is owned by Abu Dhabi, Chelsea, which until recently was owned by Roman Abramovich, the Russian Putin, you know, ally.
Mm-hmm.
Newcastle United was recently purchased by the Saudi Arabian government. And, you know, and additionally, just as recently as last year, you had a situation where a bunch of the billionaire owners of the biggest clubs in Europe decided they wanted to break away from the traditional European league structure and make $1 billion in something called the European Super League.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that if you watch soccer, basically this World Cup is, in my opinion, the criticism that you're hearing now is valid, but it is a day late and a dollar short. And more specifically, it's 12 years late and it's several billion dollars short. This didn't just happen. And so to a certain extent, for those of us who are kind of like, who have cared about the issues, who have paid attention, we've heard the stories for 10 years about the horrible conditions for workers, the heat, the corruption. There have been indictments, there have been consequences for the regime that set this World Cup up. For a lot of us who've sort of lived in this world for the last 12 years, the tournament that's starting now, this weekend, is not exposing anything. Maybe it's exposing it to the wider world, but for a lot of us, we've been saying this. And if you're kind of surprised or shocked at this week, then all that tells me is you didn't talk to a single soccer guy for the last 12 years. Because most of us have been, if you'd asked anybody who was a soccer guy about the World Cup over the last 12 years, they would have told you this.
I think it's fair. That's very fair. But, I mean, should I, as a casual soccer fan, just feel dirty about this whole thing? I mean, I'm reading other reports, up to 6,500 migrant workers died over the last 10 years building all these stadiums in Qatar. And the fact that they're reportedly not allowing a kosher food now at the venues, not allowing Jewish people to pray openly. I mean, it just feels, and this is not to say that, events have been held in the United States and we have our own problems, right? When we talked last hour about the tragedy in Colorado Springs and equal rights among gay people and women's rights, we are not without fault here. But I think when you look at basic human rights, we are further ahead than places like Qatar. So should we feel dirty about enjoying this and watching this?
I don't think so. I mean, not any more dirty than you would feel watching, if you watch the NFL, if you go look at the owners of some of these teams and you look into their politics, depending on where you fall on the political spectrum, one of the things I do personally is that, I'm just a fan. I work in a shop. I pack orders in a basement. I have very little control over these things. I don't mean to, take no responsibility for my consumption and whatnot, but nobody listens to me. When PSG bought my team, for example, the owner of Arsenal in London is a guy by the name of Stan Kroenke, who made his billions, building Walmarts and destroying downtowns all over America. When you watch the Rams, do you think about that? When you watch the Dallas Cowboys, do you think about, Jerry Jones? I think so. So you have to think of it to a certain extent. Qatar bought the World Cup, and they feel like they're using it to project both to their region, to their people, to the world. There's all sorts of these incentives and messages they're trying to put out. And I'm not a Muslim and I'm not Arab, so I try to not be super critical of things that maybe I don't understand with regards to their customs. Obviously you mentioned some of those horrific numbers. I can't tell you that those are accurate or that they're inaccurate. I do not know. One thing I do know is that big brands like Coca-Cola and Visa and Budweiser, and like you can go, the list goes on and on. They've stayed attached to this World Cup. Those companies could have said, we're not going to do this.
Right.
Fox and Telemundo could have said, we're not going to broadcast this. So this kind of like, should we feel dirty? I mean, I would say not any more dirty than anything else you watch on TV.
I think that's a fair. I mean, our former colleague, Eileen O'Neill, her dad was my communication professor at UW Platteville. And I've said this before in the show. He always came into every class, wrote a dollar sign on the board and said, it all comes down to that. What's new in your world? And it's true, right? No, your point is taken that it doesn't really matter. Money does rule the world and corruption is spread everywhere. But is there anybody who feels worse from just a business standpoint? I mean, who is the person that okayed this whole contract from Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch? Because they got all this beer there now, and they're all set up to sell. And like a day before this thing starts, the Qatari government is not so fast. Unless you're in a luxury box, you can't buy alcohol at this thing. What the hell
are they? That's a fantastic question.
What do they do with all this beer, Joe?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know how much beer is sitting in coolers there. That isn't being distributed. I've been to Qatar. It's the alcohol rules there are really, really very interesting. You can only buy booze at like three or four hotels. And there's like one government liquor store that you can go to. Otherwise, there's no place else. The local population is not allowed to consume. It's only for the foreigners. And what I've heard is that, and I don't know if I buy this actually, but that they just don't have enough people to serve the beer. You have to find willing...
There's labor shortages everywhere.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much it. And I will just give you this perspective, because again, it comes down to the money. For perspective, I read recently that the Budweiser deal, the InBev deal, they pay about $100 million every 4 years for the rights. That is less than the Qatari royal family, which owns Paris Saint-Germain, the French soccer club. That's less than they paid for Kylian Mbappe, the French star. It's less than they paid for Neymar, the Brazilian star. So $100 million to the Qataris is really, I mean, it's crazy to think. It's chump change for them. I would say don't feel bad for Budweiser, because I'm sure that the executives from InBev are at the World Cup. They're drinking beer, probably champagne. Right. And the Qatari government made them whole. I am certain of that. So
they're not hurting. They're not hurting.
And I, you know what? And I've seen some incredible adaptability, and you're seeing it from some of the biggest crowd. There aren't very many Americans there. There aren't very many Western Europeans there, I've heard. Uh-huh. But there's tons of Mexicans. There's tons of Brazilians. And, you know, as the old Jurassic Park line, life finds a way. These folks are finding a way. I've seen the people have the skins that go over beer cans that look like Coca-Cola. And so what's interesting is, this is a big part of my thing is that, you know, I have a problem with some of the stuff where the Qataris are saying, you have to respect our culture. You know, if you see on the internet, if anyone criticizes the World Cup, you know, all these accounts come out of the woodwork saying you must respect our culture. Well, I think that tolerance is a two-way street. And I think Islam is a world religion and that's fair. And they have their rules. But they invited soccer into their home, which is also a world religion. And there are certain things that are cultural in football. So I think they're going to have to, it'll be interesting because they've made this decree. But I mean, what are they going to do? Throw 200 Brazilians in jail?
Right.
We'll see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting learning process, because they are used to having total control over their population. And most of the foreigners who are there work in the Qatari government in some fashion. This is somewhat unprecedented for them to have, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people from other countries with other customs and other beliefs. It'll be interesting to see how they adapt. You know, they can make these rules hard and fast now, but it'll be interesting to see how they enforce them as the month goes on.
You bring up such a great point, Joe, that for many people, and if you don't know people like this, it's hard to grasp it. I do. For many people, soccer is essentially a religion. I was talking about this before we brought you on. There are people who will sit down and watch game after game of teams that they have near them. They just watch it for the sport. And this is an obsession for a lot of folks.
Well, if you grow up with it and you become, you know, you learn the lore, you know the stories, you know, this thing that happens every 4 years. I remember growing up in the United States, the World Cup was the only access we had to football.
Mm-hmm.
Every 4 years it would show up. The idea of a European club system was completely foreign to me. And now as I've become older, I understand how the whole system works. But for a lot of people, the World Cup is soccer. And this is the high holidays.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, we've spent 10 years hearing all the bad stories. And for those of us who really do care about the game, who don't care about the politics and can't do anything about the corruption, this is our moment to actually say, all right, fine. They put it on, four years ago, they did it in Russia. You know, it's this thing of like you said earlier, this idea of, you know, why are we having a World Cup in Qatar? Mm. Well, they bought it. You know, why did the USA have the Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta, of all places? Because Coca-Cola bought it, you know?
Right.
Going back to 1990, I'd say this is something that I would say with the world religion of football. Something that I have a problem with is in 1994, there's this kind of, you know, whether it's true or not, there's an apocryphal story that, you know, Budweiser, Coca-Cola, Visa bought the World Cup. Brought it to the United States. It was sort of this, we've won the Cold War, American capitalism wins, we're going to bring the world's game to our country, and we don't even care about this stuff, but we're going to show you how it's done. And we put on a great World Cup.
Yeah.
But they bought it cheap maybe it was expensive now, but for, you know, taking into account inflation, Qatar did the same thing, bought the World Cup. But when the USA bought it, there are these stories about like how we wanted to implement commercial breaks. We wanted to change the game to speed it up. We wanted to do these things to make it more TV friendly for the American audience. And at the time, FIFA said, we're not going to do that. This game is too important. You have to adjust to us. So fast forward to this World Cup where...
That's fine. Do you have time to stay on the other side of the commercial break and come back for a couple of minutes?
Oh, yeah.
All right, cool. We're going to a commercial break. Back with more. This is the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show. It is 9:50. Make that, check that. Yes, 9:50 on a Monday. November 21st, 2022. Great song chosen by our guest this hour, Joe Hassler Jr., originally from the Berg, as we used to call it back in the Schultz office, Reedsburg, Wisconsin, just a skip, hop, and a jump from Richland Center, where I'm from. He is now up in Minneapolis, a soccer fanatic, we'll simply call him. And we've been talking about the politics, but also the soccer itself. Great song selection, Joe. First of all, thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
And
my pleasure.
Pick up on the story before the break. You were telling us, and go ahead and finish that story, if be so kind.
Well, I just wanted to finish the thought that, as you mentioned before the break, football is a world religion. In 1994, the USA bought the World Cup, tried to change the game. FIFA said no. A difference that has occurred with this World Cup, I mean, the fact that we're talking about this in December is because the World Cup should be happening in the summertime.
Yes.
It happens in June and July. And obviously, because of Qatar's heat, they weren't able to do that. So I would say, this World Cup has disrupted sort of the natural rhythm of the Earth, which has existed since almost 1950. Every 4 years, there's a World Cup in the summertime.
Right.
And they messed with that. You know, they changed that. There are these little things that they've done to make it their own. You know, for example, we should have had a weekend full of games.
Right.
This past weekend, the first. That Friday should have been the opening ceremony and the host nation should have played. Then Saturday, Sunday should have been wall-to-wall football. But as I understand it, the Qataris, instead of starting from the Friday before the tournament starts, what they did is they wanted to have the final fall on their national holiday.
Oh, geez.
And they worked backwards from that.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
That's I take issue with a lot of the things, but as a football fan, as a soccer fanatic, one of the things I can't do anything about the corruption, obviously.
Right.
Something I really have a problem with is the things that they've done to disrupt kind of the calendar. I mean, if you're not familiar, right now we're in the middle of what would normally be the most they call it in England the festive period, where there's soccer on all the time because it's getting towards the end of the year. It's the middle of the football season. There's football everywhere, and all those leagues had to pause in the middle of it.
See, that just seems crazy.
Well, again, that's when we talk about who could have stopped this. Well, you know, the billionaires who own all these teams couldn't stop. They don't want this to be going on. Nobody, because that's something to keep in mind is the salaries for most of these players are paid for by the clubs that they play for.
Right.
And those clubs all just had to release all of their players to go play in a condensed schedule tournament thousands of miles away, in various questionable conditions. And so there's a lot of billionaires sitting at home right now watching these games, hoping that their prized possessions don't get injured because
exactly.
That could ruin the second half of their season.
Millions and millions of dollars at stake. Hundreds of millions.
Oh, even more, billions.
Yeah, probably, yeah, exactly.
It's, and I mean, it's very complicated. It's, but at the end of the day, it is all about the money. And I don't know. Like I said a little earlier, I'm just glad that the games are on now because it gives us something that the football fans can talk about.
So our last 5 minutes, Joe, let's actually talk then about football and soccer. The United States kicks off today at 1:00, I believe. Is that correct, against Wales?
Yeah, that's right. They're playing Wales today.
So give us the lay of the land. Give us your take on the U.S. perspective, their chances, and the tournament as a whole. Who do you like? Who are you watching?
Right. Well, you know, of course, we're coming off of the embarrassment of not making the World Cup 4 years ago. So there's a gaping hole in terms of what we've achieved for soccer, and that's success at the World Cup. We haven't been good at the World Cup in, I guess it was probably 2010 was our last really good World Cup.
Uh-huh.
The thing about this team right now is we, for the first time almost ever, we have top players playing at top clubs all across Europe. You know, the previous coach, one of the previous coaches, a German fella named Jürgen Klinsmann, kind of changed the culture. He lost his job because it didn't work. But he really pushed American players to push themselves and go to Europe. And you're seeing the fruits of that with this team. You've got guys like Weston McKennie, who plays at Juventus, the biggest club in Italy. You have Christian Pulisic, who plays at Chelsea in England. And so you have these guys who are competing at the highest level. And so this team is really, it's really mature. They're young guys, but they're mature because of the competition they've faced. And so, you know, I don't necessarily think they're maybe in the running to win the whole thing. But they're certainly going to be competitive. I think they should do well against Wales. Of course, Wales is full of guys who play in the English Premier League. Mm. But so do we. You know, we've got guys who play in all these great clubs, and so I'm optimistic. I think it'll be an interesting group. They seem very cohesive. They had a great qualifying, so it should be interesting to see how they do.
How far do you think the U.S. team could go, Joe?
I think they're a safe bet for the round of 16. Okay. I would say I don't see them going much further than that, but I'll be cheering for them, and I will be pleasantly surprised if they make it that far.
As they say,
one thing about this World Cup is it's hard to predict because it's in the middle. Usually the World Cup comes at the end of the season. You know who's on good form. Mm. You know who's done well. You can kind of base your predictions off of a full season worth of work. Mm. This coming in the middle of the season, as it does, with the kind of condensed schedule, there's a lot of players who are injured. It's just really hard to predict what's going on. I mean, Senegal's walking out right now without the best African player in the world, Sané. Mm-hmm. France is going to walk out in a few days without the world's best player, the Ballon d'Or player of the year winner, Karim Benzema, was announced as being. So the condensed nature of the schedule, because they're playing a lot of games in a short period of time, I think every 2 or 3 days these teams are going to be playing. It's going to be a lot about fitness. It's going to be a lot about which teams are cohesive quickly. So teams that have been together for a long time. Over the years, like Holland, which is on now, has got a bunch of kind of players who've been to a few tournaments together. Mm-hmm. So it'll be, I'm not making any prime. I'm out of the prediction business. I just cheer for the teams I like.
I was just going to ask you, we got about 2 minutes left. I'm not going to make a prediction. I'll just say, who do you like? Give me 2 or 3 teams you think could get to the finals.
In 2018, I predicted France. And unfortunately, you know, there's all this legalized sports betting now. Where was it in 2018 when I was really out on an island saying, these guys are going to win this thing?
And you called it.
I did. I called it. And so
you could be retired right now, living on an island somewhere.
I know. Believe me, I know. So I'm always a day late and a dollar short there, too. I really like England looked amazing today.
Okay.
But that was against Iran. They've got a great team. And like I said, they're a big club. They're a big country with players who played together now at 2 or 3 tournaments in a row. France, they're questionable. They've got the talent, but do they have the mindset? And finally, Brazil, obviously, always is going to be a top dog front runner. So I'd say watch for Brazil. Watch for Spain. Okay. Watch for France. Watch for Germany. Yeah, honestly, it's usually one of those countries. So, you know.
We'll see. Well, Joe Hassler Jr. joining us from Minneapolis today, soccer fanatic and political insight person and my friend. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Todd. It was a blast. Enjoy the game.
Thank you. You as well. Enjoy your time watching the games and enjoy your time up in Minneapolis. Thanks to Joe Hassler Jr. for joining us. We're going to take a news break, back with our third hour. After this, you're listening to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.